Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is the podcast of Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This is just one segment of today's show. You can hear all of our conversations about New York's vibrant cultural scene on demand at WNYC.org. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC podcasts are supported by Holy Name Hospital in Teaneck, New Jersey, providing comprehensive centers in cardiovascular services, interventional radiology, and cancer care. More information at www.holyname.org.
Oh, no. Oh, say, say, say.
This is Soundcheck at 93.9 WNYC and online at WNYC.org. I'm John Schaefer. In the background, a little bit from the band The Yeah Yeah Yeahs. They broke out in the music scene in a big way with this album, Fever to Tell, back in 2003. Today, The Yeah Yeah Yeahs have released their second record. It's called Show Your Bones. And the initial response has been mixed, and that got us to thinking about the perils of the infamous sophomore jinx. So we thought we'd speak to a man who's seen his fair share of sophomore efforts. Nathan Brackett is senior editor at Rolling Stone magazine, where he heads up the record reviews division. He joins us by phone. Nathan, thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure. How you doing?
Good, good. What kind of expectations do you have when you see a sophomore record from a band that's had already a hit, and when that first crosses your desk, do you expect it to be one thing or another?
Well, you know, it all depends on the first album, obviously. I mean, the big cliche is that a band has a lifetime to make their first album, but only, say, 12 months to do their second album. And if that first album was a huge hit, it puts that much more pressure on the second album. So, you know, it's always a mix of excitement, you know, maybe a little bit of dread, you know, when you get a second album, especially if you love the debut, because you just don't know if the band is going to be able to keep it up. I mean, the second album is the first chance for them to say, you know, we're going to be, you know, an artist that's going to be here for a long time, or we're going to be kind of a one-album wonder.
Yeah. Now, before the Yeah Yeah Yeahs album even came out, I mean, today is the release day, there was a reviewer in the L.A. Times who was already picking at it and citing a fan who said, "It seems the Yeah Yeah Yeahs have lost the edge, or at least forgot how it started. They are well on their way to sounding just like any other band." Is that sort of criticism almost inevitable when the first album has been well received?
I think so, and I think that particular criticism was kind of simplistic. I actually love this album. I think, you know, the Yeah Yeah Yeahs are a band who are still kind of finding themselves. They're not fully formed, and I think those are often the best kind of second albums. When an artist kind of hasn't figured themselves out on the first album, when the first album has a lot of potential, which I think was the case with the first Yeah Yeah Yeahs record, which had a lot of energy, and their front woman Karen O was very exciting, you know. But the songs, for me, to my taste, the songs weren't always there.
Mm-hmm.
The new album I find actually has, you know, more fully formed songs. It's actually got a few singles. I think they actually kind of sold out, kind of in a good way. One song which is pretty amazing is "Gold Lion," which is the opening track of the album.
Well, let's hear a little bit of it. This is from Show Your Bones, the new album, the sophomore record from the band The Yeah Yeah Yeahs.
There was crowd of seas inside.
Some music from the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, and this is from the new album called Show Your Bones, follow-up to their debut, Fever to Tell. We're speaking with Nathan Brackett, senior editor at Rolling Stone magazine, about the dreaded sophomore jinx. There was a review in Elle magazine, Nathan, that said, Show Your Bones is more straightforward than Fever to Tell, less abrasive, and annoyingly pleased with itself. You like the record.
Yeah, I do. You know, I was floored by that song the first time I heard it by Gold Lion, which he just played. I mean, I thought it was the best kind of second album song in the sense that it wasn't what you were expecting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it had some acoustic guitar. It had kind of a big dumb chorus, and you know, maybe I'm just kind of revealing my tastes. But you know, I think you know the new Yeah Yeah Yeahs record is going to go down as one of their best.
Mm-hmm. Now, why do you suppose this jinx people feel this sort of pressure? Is it just something that people have made up, or is there really something at work, some kind of deeper thing going on here?
Well, I mean, there's no harsher critic than kind of a spurned fan, you know, than a disappointed fan, you know. The people who are the harshest on second albums or third albums or fourth albums are always fans who feel that they have a real stake in a band and that the band has let them down.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have someone who thinks that the Yeah Yeah Yeahs are just a New York art rock band and nothing more, and that's what they love them for, they're going to have a hard time when they move to L.A. and they maybe have a bigger budget for recording an album and take some more chances.
And is there a fear, I mean, at least as you've seen it over the years among artists, that maybe maybe you only get one great record, and there's always that fear that maybe the first one was it?
There is. I mean, I know people have said that about the Strokes. Is This It was such a big record for its year that they ran into some problems with their second album. They kind of had a different approach or an interesting approach to their second album. It's almost as if they kind of decided that they weren't going to do anything different.
Yeah. I mean, that seems that the Strokes' second album seems to be, of recent years, this is the one that people kind of point to as evidence of what we're talking about, the sophomore jinx. This is the title track from the first Strokes album, the critically acclaimed and pop hit, Is This It? And then this is from the Strokes' second record, their sophomore effort from 2003, called Room on Fire. So there's a little bit from the first two albums by the Strokes. We're speaking with Nathan Brackett, senior editor at Rolling Stone magazine, about the sophomore jinx. And I mean, I suppose, Nathan, if you came to the Strokes just with the second record, you'd wonder why critics were carping at this band. I mean, it's a very well produced record.
The second record definitely has its fans. I think a lot of people who love the first record probably said, "Okay, I get it. I don't need to hear another album."
Right, right.
You know, maybe we're hoping that the Strokes would take a couple more chances. But I think it was a very conscious strategy on their part. I mean, they stayed with the same producer. I think they made a decision kind of not to spaz out and take, you know, lots of chances on their second album. And it's interesting because on their most recent record, which came out last month, they kind of did take those chances. They kind of took the distortion or the vocal processing off of Julian, the lead man's voice, and have a couple songs which don't sound immediately like Stroke songs.
Mm-hmm. And critics have come around again.
Yeah, they've come around. You know, the new album got some mixed reviews too, but I think people are giving them credit for taking some more chances.
Right.
One of our writers, Rob Sheffield, has a theory that if they had made the most recent album as their second album, their second album, Room on Fire, would have been hailed as their great return to form. So, you know, the song that you played was called I Can't Win, which is kind of could be the case with for some people.
Yeah. All right. Let's take some calls. What do you think about the sophomore jinx? Do you have a favorite sophomore album, a least favorite sophomore album? And if so, tell us why. What makes that second record such a step forward or such a step back? Our number is 212-264-7483. 212-264-7483. And actually, I'll start, Nathan, with you. Do you have any other good examples of failed sophomore releases?
Well, one big one it would probably be the second U2 record, October. When it came out, I liked it, you know, but it's really all over the place. It really doesn't hold up. There are a couple great songs on it. In fairness to Bono, he supposedly lost all of his lyrics the day before they went into the studio and had to write them on the scene. But that was one where they really kind of went for it and just didn't quite achieve it.
Right, right. Well, here's a little bit. From U2's October.
And the trees are stripped bare of all they wear. What do I care? October and kingdoms rise and kingdoms fall as you go on. Then
a little bit of music from U2's sophomore effort many years ago, the album called October. We're speaking with Nathan Brackett, senior editor at Rolling Stone magazine, and about to go to the phones as well. We got an interesting email from Jerome in Chester, New Jersey, who points out that the sophomore slump has always been a somewhat problematic thing. He writes, "Creativity is a funny thing. Either you've got or you don't. So while a second outing can in many respects be more challenging, it's worth noting that, for the most part, the great ones had no letdown and even got better." And he gives us a whole list of examples. Elvis Costello, My Aim Is True, was followed by This Year's Model, a great record. Cream, Fresh Cream, was followed by the classic Disraeli Gears. Al Green, Gets Next to You, was followed by Al Green's Let's Stay Together, and Van Morrison, Carole King, other examples. So thanks for that, Jerome. Nathan, you write and edit a lot of reviews. How much pressure can you put on a band before they crack under the weight of expectations after a hit debut?
Yeah, I mean, I think we try to keep that in mind. I mean, I think, you know, there's definitely kind of a this thing maybe left over from the 60s where you could try to kind of elevate bands into superheroes and that they're kind of drawing this narrative in stone with every album, you know, when they would say we're just trying to do stuff that sounds good.
Right.
But, you know, Jerome makes a good point. I mean, if you look at, you know, the list goes on. If you look at, you know, Neil Young, you know, he had an eponymous first album, which is, you know, not half as good as his second album. Everybody Knows This Is Nowhere. Bob Dylan kind of did a throwaway first album and then came back with Freewheeling Bob Dylan.
Right.
You know, that's an interesting list, kind of people who got dramatically better on their second album.
All right, well, let's see what some of our listeners have to say. We'll begin in Manhattan with Robert. Welcome to Soundcheck, Robert.
Hi, thank you. It's a really interesting conversation. It's really frustrating, too, because I think there's a certain sort of hipster mentality that kicks in there, and sort of, with a band like the AES, sort of on one level, like, I think they're looking for, you know, kind of priming the band to fail. I think if they did, you know, if they had redone Fever to Tell, everyone would have said, you've done Fever to Tell Part 2.
Right.
And since they've tried not to do it, no one's going to say, well, it doesn't sound like Fever to Tell. And I think it's a really good record. I'm a big believer, you know, if you get it right, you do something really sort of singular and move on. Don't simply rehash it. And
Well, sort of what Nathan was saying before. I mean, you know, a hit debut, you almost have no way to win the second time out. You're gonna tick off somebody.
There are great examples. You know, like I would add in things like the second Roxy Music album, For Your Pleasure, more songs about buildings and food by the Talking Heads that were both, I think, are at least as strong as the first, maybe better. And I'm also a big believer in people like Goldfrapp when they followed Felt Mountain, which was all weird and cinematic, with a record, essentially a disco record, a very good disco record. So they didn't simply rehash what they had done for the first record. But it's frustrating. I think a lot of bands buckle under the pressure, though, and there is truth to the sophomore.
Well, and Robert, you're right. There's a lot more pressure out there too now with the internet and things like that. Let's move right along to Brad in New Jersey. Welcome to Soundcheck.
Well, a group that I'm very fond of is an English group called The Beautiful South. And to address the sophomore jinx, they actually named their second album Choke.
Choke?
And, yeah. Yeah, I remember
and that. And did they, Brad?
Actually, I think it was a strong album, maybe not quite as strong as their first, but...
But you give them points for knowing how to handle the...
That makes me think of Sugar Ray, who aren't as good as Beautiful South, but they named one of their albums up 14 minutes and 59 seconds.
All right, moving along. Ben in Brooklyn, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi, this conversation is really interesting. I heard the Beastie Boys mentioned earlier, and it got me thinking about Paul's Boutique, their follow-up to... License to Ill.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was going to mention that too. I mean, and there are bands who are kind of like the Yeahs, moved to L.A. They're a very New York identified band.
Moved to
L.A. Sorry, keep going. I'm sorry.
Oh, I mean, yeah, the perfect parallel there, because they sort of, you know, left their you know, ground in New York and decided to sort of reinvent themselves. And critically, you know, it's one of their best albums, but people just didn't know what to expect. Like, no one bought it, and it's kind of a shame.
Yeah, and it is, I think, you know, as you say, critically perceived as a kind of a step ahead of the first record, and in fact, that's why we have it ready to go. Here's a little bit of Shake Your Rump from Paul's Boutique by the Beastie Boys. Boutique was the sophomore release by the Beastie Boys, and you know, may not have been the financial success that builds on their hit debut License to Ill, but it was critically acclaimed.
And that was one where that people just didn't know what to make of at the time. I mean, people really thought they'd had them pegged on their first album. You know, it was License to Ill. It was big, dumb, you know, three guys are, you know, spraying Budweiser all over their fans. And, you know, some people still think that's what they are. You know, it was such a big debut album. And they just totally backed away from that, and it worked.
Yeah. Let's see if we can squeeze in another call. Dan in Manhattan, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hey, what's going on?
Well, we're talking about sophomore jinxes. You got an example for us?
Yeah, definitely. I was actually just going to mention three quick ones. I thought that Verses after 10 from Pearl Jam was awesome, but, you know, once they came out with 10, it was, like, hard to beat that in any way. It was just so seminal for the early 90s. And and then the bends for Radiohead after Pablo Honey, they kind of just never looked back and kept changing much after...
That's a good one, yeah.
After each one. And then the only other thing I was thinking was Pinkerton from Weezer, which is a really interesting one because they hate it and they never play any of it live, but the songs are just amazing, and that album got me through law school. I listened to it before every single exam I ever had.
The Weezer album.
Pinkerton is just phenomenal.
All right, Dan, thanks, and I'm glad you mentioned Radiohead because, in fact, we have several emails from people also mentioning the sophomore release by Radiohead, the album called The Bends, as a good example of a band that beat the sophomore jinx. And a little bit of that album in the background, or in the foreground, as the case may be. We've been speaking with Nathan Brackett, senior editor at Rolling Stone magazine, about the dreaded sophomore jinx. Nathan, you think the AAAs have somehow managed to avoid it with the new album out today?
Well, I think so. I think people give them. I hope that people give them a chance on the new album, because they're definitely trying new things, and you really can't ask that much more from a band.
All right, Nathan, thank you for joining us, and to everyone who has been with us on the phone or via email, thank you for joining us today as well. You can always email us with your thoughts, soundcheck@wnyc.org. Thanks for listening to today's podcast of Soundcheck from WNYC, New York Public Radio. This was just one of the show's segments. You can hear everything we do on demand at WNYC.org. Check out our other podcasts at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.